Hello, my loves. Today we are talking about how spiritual teachers, really I think we're all spiritual teachers, deal with anxiety. All right, in keeping with our new tradition, I'm opening every podcast episode with a gift code. So episodes are always dropping on Wednesdays. And typically I do a membership class or I do a business mastermind class on Thursdays. So tomorrow, Thursday, March 14th, I'm doing a business mastermind called Spring Clean Your Business. It's happening at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, but you get the recording and the field notes and the replay is yours forever. You head to daniellelaporte.com/mastermind. So here's how it works. To become part of our mastermind community where we are throwing down once a month, it's me directly teaching a class. And then once a month, you have a coaching call with my leadership team. And then we're supporting you in the back end and newsletter with great business ideas and anything you need for conscious careering and entrepreneurship. That's our jam. So here's what's happening in Spring Clean Your Business tomorrow on the 14th. My wing women and I are going to show you the systems, the software, the strategies that have been costing us way too much money and too much energy. We're going to walk you through the new plans and procedures that we put in place for our very small team. And we are really gliding like we never have before. So this is going to be a very behind the scenes, very listy, very practical, very accessible strategy huddle. It's been a really growthful quarter for our business, spiritually, on all the levels. And part of that is because we are so good at cleaning shit up. And then, of course, with everything we do, there's a really dynamic Q&A, and we will be as coachy and specific as we can for you. So you head to daniellelaporte.com/mastermind. You use the code POD104. That's POD104. You get $25 off of your first month in our heart-centered mastermind. And then that mastermind community also includes my heart-centered membership. There's a lot of layers and a lot of value in there. And because this is time-sensitive, the code is valid until the live class starts on Thursday, March 14th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, daniellelaporte.com/mastermind. Code POD104. You save $25 and hopefully we'll help you make thousands of more in clear thinking, solid business strategy, and heart-centered leadership. I've got a fun announcement, actually. This podcast episode will be ad-free. I tried as an experiment for a few episodes to let other advertisers parachute in. And the way the system works, I'm not always made aware of what ads are being inserted into the podcast. It's this whole system, you know. And apparently some Botox ad slipped in while I was being all love and light. And nothing against Botox, but understandably, a little jarring. And it was a business experiment, and we're all clear. It really doesn't work for me. What really works for me is creative sovereignty. So I will just continue to talk about things that I love and have tried and adore and actually think would bring some benefit to your life as we move forward. But today we're going ad-free. This is part 3 in a 4-part episode series on how to heal with anxiety. There's a few layers in there. How to heal, even though you have anxiety. How to heal because of your anxiety. And we're going to give extra emphasis to that today on how anxiety really serves to be the portal to our power. As wackadoodle as that can sound when we're having panic attacks and anxiety waves. Now, because this is a series, I would really love it if you subscribe. That also helps us raise the consciousness of the algorithm. So there are lots of masters, people I would consider masters. You know, that can often be used as a branding term. Spiritual masters, adepts, yogis, yoginis, high-level mastery people. who have suffered from horrible physical pain. Like the physical body suffers from all kinds of things. It's a universal thing. And nobody, even if you are Paramahansa Yogananda, is exempt from this while you are on planet Earth. I mean, this is the nature of this Earth school, dualism. We are cramming our souls into these suitcases called bodies, and the soul is going to stir things up in the unconscious self, and it will surface through the vehicle of the body, and sometimes it's ouch. It's owie. So it doesn't matter how enlightened a being is. If they're in the suitcase, they're going to feel some physical duress. They are going to be using their body as a conduit for transmuting suffering into more enlightenment. And like, you know, nobody gets out of here alive. Krishnamurti, one of my favorite philosophers, suffered from terrible migraines, so intense apparently he would yell out in the middle of the night. Ram Dass, so many people's favorite contemporary mystic, rest in peace, suffered a massive stroke. Yogananda is said to have had crippling pain, which was believed to be because he took on the karma of his devotees. Julian of Norwich, she was totally cool. She was this recluse abbess. She lived in an abbey in the 1400s, and people would come to her window and ask for her guidance. She suffered horribly. St. John of the Cross, literally rotting in prison. However, as far as I can tell, none of these great teachers struggled specifically with anxiety and or panic attacks. And that is what I'm really interested in for this How to Heal with Anxiety series. And I found some teachers for us. Let me introduce you to Mengur Rinpoche, if you don't already know him. I will give you a quote from his bio. Mengur Rinpoche is a world-renowned meditation teacher with a personal experience of anxiety and panic attacks. This is in his bio on the site for his monastery, which he suffered from throughout his childhood and into his teenage years when he learned to transform his panic through meditation. He's still alive, by the way. You can follow him on Instagram. At Mengur Rinpoche. This guy was a really cool cat. He is a highly venerated monk. So he comes from a lineage of Buddhist teachers. There's a lot of reverential respect and honor around his whole family and lineage. When he was only 12 years old, he asked to go into a 3-year retreat. This is exceptional. They had to make an exception to the rule to let him do this. He goes on to be a great teacher and guide and leader for 3 different monasteries. And when he was in his mid-30s, he decided to peace out, essentially, that he was going to become a wandering yogi. And he snuck out in the middle of the night. This is like kind of James Bond meets Buddhist monastery. Left a note to his disciples and gave them no idea of where he was going or if he was ever going to come back. This is some radical seeking stuff. So he goes from a life where he has assistants, he's fed every day, there's always someone with him letting him know about his schedule, he is honored and respected. You know, the Buddhist red carpet is rolled out for him wherever he goes. Jump cut to, he has this deep call to go rogue. And, you know, this is sort of like, you know, the rich boy Siddhartha story, where he leaves all of his luxury, his respect, his riches behind. He's going to go out into society, planes, trains, automobiles, uses money, cash in his hand for the first time, eventually ends up meditating deeply in the caves. And after 4.5 years, with lots of stories to tell, goes back to his monasteries, plural, to resume leadership. Isn't that badass? I love this story. Now, what really cracked me open about this was, in addition to hearing about the panic attacks he suffered when he was a young boy and a teenager, so what would happen was it would be instigated by weather conditions. So a storm would come, the rain would start falling, the panic attack would take him over, he would curl up in a ball trembling in a corner. He experienced that during his 3-year meditation retreat and was, due to meditation practices, able to resolve that. Okay, that is amazing in and of itself. But what really struck me was that after all of those years, post that experience of being in a position of astute spiritual leadership, deep, consistent practices, working with the teachings in the Bardo and Death, leaves his monastery to go rogue and starts to experience panic attacks again. You know, when I first heard about this, I thought, really, like all of that perpetual practicing and yet panic attacks again? Really? And it felt strangely comforting to me that somebody who was at mastery level was having such a human experience that I too was familiar with. Now, back to podcast episode 102, where I talked about the 7 types of anxiety and ways to heal. There's a difference between anxiety and panic. And I think it's really important to have metaphors for these. In my experience, anxiety is like this wave of energy that threatens to take you under. It's very tremulous and threatening. Panic, on the other hand, feels like a tsunami in your senses. You do not know which way is up. And part of the panic on top of the panic is you do not know how you're going to get yourself back to the surface again. So whereas anxiety feels more like dread, panic feels more like utter doom. Anxiety is acutely uncomfortable. Panic feels like a crisis. So here we have Mingyur self-catapulted into a journey into society. He's by himself. The panic returns. And this is how he describes it. As a child, I had come to accept that fear of panic itself could provoke an attack, as if the power of projection compelled the event to materialize. You see, anybody relate? This is just of the mind. Therefore, in addition to panic, fear too became the enemy, another torment to reject and despise. This is what's really important in this sentence here, the rejection and the despising of these really uncomfortable states of mind. He continues to say, all I wanted to do with the parts of myself that I disliked was get rid of them, discard them as garbage. I did not understand their value as compost for my sanity. So let's all just take a breath right now. We can pretty easily pull up parts of ourselves that we dislike, that we want to get rid of. I'll just give you a second. Is it your greediness? Is it your fear? Is it your panic? Is it your loneliness? Is it your neediness? Is it your cellulite? Is it your jealousy? Is it your hypersensitivity? How about acne? How about cheating ways? How about holding on to the grievances from betrayal? Fear of being seen. Fear of speaking up. Fear of the dark. Avoidance of all the things that we fear. There's so many layers, right? Okay, so if you don't relate to panic attacks, if you've never had one, and you don't even relate to anxiety, just take one of those things that you dislike about yourself, that you want to put in the garbage, that you're always trying to push away, maybe that you're going to counseling or therapy for, and hold that in your mind as I walk you through this process of relating differently with the things that we're trying to get rid of. And that includes panic and anxiety. Now here in this teaching, Mingyur is taking total responsibility for the mind stuff, what we would call the citta, the mind citta, that is creating the panic attacks. He says, I contributed to fixing these attacks in place with the two aspects of craving, pushing the problem away to get rid of it, which only fueled the fear of panic as well as the fear of fear itself, and pulling. Pulling as in wanting to pull into my life what I considered the opposite. If only I could be free of panic, my life would be wonderful. So now you insert like your thing that you're pushing away. If only my life could be free of blank, what are you going to insert into your blank? Do you think your life would be wonderful? Like probably, totally, right? Of course. And there we have it. We have the advanced class in Human Earth School of Duality. If only living, rather than, this is what's happening, living. Acceptance with a capital A, living. Not pushing the stuff away, kind of living. Now, what's the opposite of acceptance? Obviously, the push away, right? But underneath all of that, the opposite action, energy of acceptance is over-controlling. You're trying to manipulate something to be the way you want it to be. You're not at peace, not in the flow, not trusting what's arising from within yourself or what life is presenting to you. You want to change what's going on so you can be more comfortable, less anxious, less needy, less on the outside, a little more superior, more acceptable, more belonging. So all of those hungry ghosts within ourselves start to manipulate what's happening inside of us. We spiritually bypass our feelings. Oh, I'm not angry. I'm not anxious. I don't feel needy. I'm not embarrassed. This is my karma. These are my lessons. I've got this. I'm going to overcome the fear. I'm going to life hack my way through what's really happening. There are 7 steps for me to avoid who I actually am today, right now, as is. I think panic and anxiety are here to make sure that we do not avoid ourselves as is. So if none of that works, what's the antidote to pushing it away, embracing it? Here's what Mingyur has to say. I saw that instead of needing to get rid of my panic, insert your thing, I had to become familiar with the rigid sense of self that kept trying to hold things in place. I could let the panic lead a life of its own. It would dissolve forever or maybe rise again and yet again, but either way, I could live with it. And I saw that even if I got rid of my panic, other waves would arise, and there would always be difficult circumstances, sorrow, sickness, anxiety, and strong emotions. But without a fixed mind, these daily life problems could return to the larger, more spacious ocean mind, which I would call the heart. He concludes by saying, trying to stop the waves would be like trying to stop the mind or grasp air in our hands. It's not possible. For me, that approach took such a load off to know that I didn't have to so deeply, pervasively fix my panic and anxiety attacks that they never visited me ever again as much as I wanted to. I mean, those are house guests. You do not want to be coming by on a regular basis. The teaching helped me chill out. It gave me faith in my future that if it came back, I could handle it. And that all I really needed to do was work with my mind in current time. I didn't have to be enlightened in the future. I didn't even have to work towards enlightenment. I just needed to be enlightened in micro moments of noticing. Yeah, really helped me chill. Hey, my loves, I want to tell you about powerful planetary things. Wednesday, March 20th is the spring equinox. So we're going to get together to do a special meditation. It's going to happen that morning, Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. Pacific. That's 10 Eastern. head to daniellelaporte.com/spring to register. It's going to be $20, and half of the proceeds are going to one of my favorite charitable organizations, V-Day, which is founded by V, formerly known as E. Venzler, to help end violence against women and girls across the world. Spring Equinox, Wednesday, March 20th, daniellelaporte.com/spring. Powerful time for healing and setting intentions. Okay, let's talk about Adyashanti. So Adyashanti was born Stephen Gray. He is a teacher of non-dualism, of Zen. I love his approach to the ego, his teaching of the ego. I talk about this in my book, How to Be Loving, where he uses the phrase egoing to help us see that the ego isn't some gnarly entity that's outside of ourselves. It's just a way of being. It's not something to leave on the porch with your anxiety and your panic attacks. It's an energy that's constrictive, that's shadowy, that keeps telling us that we are not our true selves. So my practice of that is, instead of saying, oh, that was my ego and I totally need to get my ego in check, I will just say to myself, oh, I was egoing, which is to say, I wasn't being loving. You know, here's my personal story with Adyashanti. So I've read a lot of his material. I'm a YouTube fan, and I sat in many of his digital sanghas over the last couple of years. So he would teach every Sunday online. And after 20, maybe 30 years of teaching, he decided at the end of 2023 to retire. Now, what I had been aware of, because he'd been publicly open about this, was that for 20 years, he dealt with some really intense physical pain. And what I could piece together and kind of heard a bit of was that it was a nerve condition that was really, much of the time, excruciating for him. And he finally figured out what was going on for him. The condition resolved itself. He was no longer in pain. And it was around that time, I'm guessing within a year or two, that he decided that he wanted to retire from public teaching. He was going to continue to live in Eastern Sierras in California. Maybe he would write a book or two. He would continue to practice, but he wasn't going to be running his retreat center anymore. In fact, he was going to be handing it all over to his wife, Mukti. She's also a beautiful teacher. Okay, so Adyashanti is an individual who's had a series of awakening experiences. For me, I would consider him one of my, he's definitely like in my top 17. He's in my top 5 influential teachers because of his really heart-centered approach to everyday enlightenment. My favorite book of his, by the way, is called Emptiness Dancing. He's just loving, you know? So I listened to his last talk. It's the retirement talk. There was a lot of people in the digital house. And he goes on to tell the community that as a result of the continuous physical pain he suffered over the 20 years, he's dealing with a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, so let's just press pause there. This enlightened, masterful, heart-centered Zen teacher is dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder? What? Oh, I guess I'm not that much of a loser for my past dance with anxiety. Okay, so, you know, that's what I say to myself. He goes on to say that as a result of the PTSD, he is taking some anti-anxiety medication. Specifically, I think if I recall correctly, Ativan. Okay, so let me just rewind. Me, 6 years ago, emergency room, St. Joseph's Hospital, because that's where you can most easily get in Vancouver, on the other side of a panic attack. My mother insisted, she was in my living room for the better part of 2 days while I was just sobbing on the floor. My mom insisted, Danny, she calls me Danny. Don't anybody else think they can call me Danny. Danny, I really think we should go to emergency. And I was baffled by that because I'm not a hospital person. I gave birth in my living room. I don't really even want to take a Tylenol. For me, it's all like just functional medicine, naturopathic, all that. And I said, why would I go to the hospital? I didn't know if she like wanted to have me locked up or what. And she said, well, they can give you something. And I was like, what are they going to give me? I just didn't get it, but there I am. And a really lovely, clear-minded woman doctor says, how can I help you? After I only waited 45 minutes. And I just said, I didn't even have a word for it. I didn't even know I was having panic attacks. And I said, I'm having a hard time breathing sometimes, racing heart. I can't stop crying. This has been 3 days of this crying jag. I don't know what's going on. And I couldn't even put the words together. I was flustered. At the same time, I'm trying to be very composed. Danielle Laporte in my toque and my sunglasses. So she doesn't think I'm a total nutbag. But here I am saying, this is my version of being a nutbag. How can you help me? And she was quite warm and lovely. And she just very calmly said, I understand. And I thought, oh, all right, I've got a sympathetic ear. Then I need to let her know that I need to be on stage in high heels in 2 weeks. And if this happens to me on stage, I'm going to die. And she said, I can help you with both of these situations. And she wrote me a prescription for, I'd never heard of it at the time, some Ativan. And some other thing, which I never took, that was to regulate one's heart beat during performance anxiety situations. And I just like, I'm not taking anything that regulates my heartbeat. If we can just get me from just being a total mess, I can get myself in my heels and my OB belt and my Spanx and get on stage and be wise for 90 minutes, which I did, by the way, rocked the house. Little did this packed conference room of beautiful women in Fargo know that I was on Ativan at the time. But I pulled that whole day off and I stood in line and I signed 600 books. And I think I actually helped some people in my state of duress because they didn't know I was in a state of duress. But here we are. So I'm wondering if you can imagine or assume the self-judgment and ridicule I put myself through for A, just having to go into the emergency room, but B, actually filling the prescription for Ativan. Here's the description of it. Ativan, also known as lorazepam, belongs to a class of medications called benzodiazepines. It is thought that benzodiazepines work by enhancing the activity of certain neurotransmitters in the brain. It is used in adults and children at least 12 years old. Oh my God, I cannot imagine giving that to a 12-year-old. It is also used to treat insomnia caused by anxiety and temporary situational stress. Life these days is not so temporary situational stress. It is also used sometimes to treat nausea and vomiting from cancer treatment to control agitation caused by alcohol withdrawal. Warnings: it can slow or stop your breathing, especially if you have recently used an opioid medication, alcohol, or other drugs that slow your breathing. These effects can be fatal. Misuse of Ativan can cause addiction, overdose, or death. Keep this medicine where others cannot get to it. It may be habit forming. So I want nothing to do with the Ativan, but I also want to get out of my pain. So I was amazed at how easy it was to get it. I think it was because I sound so not nutbag. Well, I am declaring my instability with great accuracy and composure. But man, did I run to the drugstore to get that prescription filled. I was also amazed at how many tablets, I thought a lot, were in the bottle. Like, I think the full prescription got me like 30 to 40 tablets. I think that's way too much for something that someone has never taken, and that can be habit forming. Personally, I think that's irresponsible. But anyway, I got it. In my own healthy, I would say, spiritual willfulness to not rely on substances, I counted the amount of Ativan that I took over a 3-month period, which was 8 out of the 30 or 40. I would often call a friend in hysterical tears saying, I think I need one of those things. And she would say, take one. And I go, okay, I'm only going to take half. In fact, if I can cut it in half or bite it in half, I'm only going to take a quarter. And the relief was immediate. And the relief, this is what it served to do for me at the time. The relief helped me see that relief was possible. That my body could come back to homeostasis. That even though it was assisted by a medication, I could get back to a regulated nervous system. Now, my experience, I know this isn't the same for everybody. My experience was that on a more energetic, metaphysical level, I felt that whatever I was managing, trying to love, suppressing, navigating in those few times, those 8 times or 16 times, because I'd only ever take a half a tablet at a time, of taking Ativan, it just came back for me with more ferocity the next day. So I would, let's say on a Monday, I would have a wiggy, difficult time and I would take half a tablet. On Tuesday, I would wig out even more. And I had enough wits about me to realize that the monster was just coming back louder. And strangely, miraculously enough, on the second round, the day after Ativan, I was more able, more equipped to sometimes white knuckle it until it passed, or do whatever needed to be done, go for a walk in nature, all these tools, which I'll talk about later, to get through the anxiety attack. So that was my relationship with head meds. And I have in a very teeny tiny bottle 2 Ativan tablets that I've been carrying around for 6 years now, probably expired and might kill someone on contact. And I carry them with me with the intention of using them if a friend needs one. Like, I've always had this image in my mind of like someone being in an accident and I would run to pray on them and do some healing and some Reiki, which I really know nothing about, but I just bring down the light. And if that didn't work, I'd say like, hey, I got an Ativan. So let's go back to Adyashanti, who's explaining that because of the PTSD of the extreme physical pain he was under, he is taking Ativan. And with the sweetest smile and his, you know, characteristic gentility, he says, I now know what so many of us in our Sangha have experienced. He doesn't indicate at all that he had any prior judgment to people in his spiritual community who were using Ativan and similar substances to manage their anxiety and panic attacks. He's just in a total state of curiosity that has been resolved because now he can speak to it. And then he went on to tell us that he wanted to affirm and confirm with everybody that the Ativan did not interrupt his awakening experiences. It wasn't fracturing his meditative practice. Oh, I just had to press pause because I just find that so moving, you know, to, you know, hear someone who has so deeply influenced some of my thinking and my ways of loving, to see him be so humble with his humanity. Yeah, I think out of all of the things I've ingested from Adi Ashanti, that may have been the most effectual teaching of all. And that is the teaching of acceptance with a capital A, which is not often enough discussed in the whole conversation in both the holistic and medical communities around anxiety. It's something we are trained to push away with drugs, push away with our minds, push away with life hacking. Here's a teaching directly from Adi Ashanti. He says, "The biggest embrace of love you'll ever make is to embrace yourself completely. And then you'll realize you've just embraced the whole universe and everything and everybody in it." And that means you embrace the anxiety from 6 years ago, the panic attacks from your childhood. It means you embrace the drugs and the no drugs. You embrace the resistance, yeah? And then you move into becoming really the king, the queen of your mandala, the parent of your life. This connects so beautifully to a teaching of Audre Lorde, who said, "Nothing I accept about myself can be used against me to diminish me." You can't make fun of my anxiety. You cannot make fun of my isms or my brilliance or my past, because I accept all of those things about me. I have already loved them and transmuted them. They belong to me. They have become my radiance. You cannot use those things against me. That was me, by the way, just riffing, not Audre Lorde, but in homage to Audre. And there you have it, my friends. Next week, because you're subscribed, you'll get a notification that podcast 105 is dropping. And I'm calling it 11 Signs That You're High Functioning, But Anxious. It me. It was me. It is maybe you. It's all of us at one point or another. I have come to the conclusion, which may change any minute now, that the more aware, enlightened, heart-centered we become, the more we realize that the spiritual journey is about our humanity. If this is helpful in any way, please forward it to a friend that needs to hear it. Reviews really help move the light forward. And for those of you who are listening on your devices and you take a photo of this while you're listening and you share it on social media, I love you. Extra thanks. And I love resharing those things. It really goes a long way. Until next Wednesday, deep breath into your heart. Feel that warm, friendly, luminous quality. It's eternal. It's never leaving you, because it is the big you. Yeah, and that is where the virtue, the soul quality of acceptance lives. And that is where anxiety and panic can come to rest in love. We got this. We're going to hold hands and go all the way. I'm so glad you're here. With love, Danielle. Thank you so much for listening, for feeling, for spreading the word. With love.